My name is Andrew King from Texas A&M, and I'm going to be presenting a portion of my dissertation research that deals with four native Texas ground covers and their tolerance to acute drought stress and how provenance has some influence on that particular tolerance. So as has been discussed at length here this week, in 2011 we experienced, much of the country experienced, severe drought stress. In some cases 50 to 100 year droughts were experienced in that particular time frame, and even after a year to 2 years of average rainfall and even above average rainfall in some cases, much of the country is still experiencing severe to extreme drought. As you can see from the map here in the upper left-hand corner, this was taken on the 1st of July from the U.S. Drought Monitor site. And so we have a serious problem with drought and with water. And so in 2008, even before this particular drought cycle had really begun, our lab began to look for stress-tolerant plant materials that we could screen, especially natives in our particular area. And we landed on five species of particular interest to us. And of those five, I'll be using four of those in our research here today. Erigeron procumbens, there on the left-hand side, which is Corpus Christi fleabane. Mimosa stridulosa, powder puff plant. Onothera drummondii, which is sea or beach primrose. And Phyllinotoflora, which is matchstick plant or turkey tangle frog fruit, which is one of my all-time favorite common names. And of these four species, to my knowledge, only one has been used in a drought-tolerant study per se. Chang et al. In 95. Studied the drought tolerance of a number of different plants, but Mimosa stridulosa proved to be particularly drought tolerant, especially to cyclical moisture stress, which we'll be referring to as chronic drought stress today. New and Rodriguez in 2009 used multiple regimes of drought to study the drought tolerance of rose rootstocks. They used six different cycles of what they considered mild drought stress. Again, we'll consider chronic drought stress today. And then an acute drought stress, which was imposed by completely withholding irrigation. And then Denny in 07 and Denny et al. In 14 were really the studies from where our methodology for this particular study comes from. They studied the provenance effect of drought tolerance on bald cypress. And two different studies were designed, an acute drought stress study, in which, again, irrigation was completely withheld until half of the given representatives of a particular treatment were a necrotic, and then a chronic drought stress study in which plants were watered and then given a day without irrigation, rewatered, given 2 days without irrigation, rewatered, given 3 days without irrigation, until a 10-day interval was reached in that particular study. So for our study, we, again, modeled our methodology somewhat after that study. You'll notice the map down here. I hope most everyone can see it, but this is a map of our initial collection region, so that began in 2008, and it stretched all the way from the south tip of Texas into deep east Texas and even northwestern Louisiana, and so we were able to collect from a relatively large area. And what we tried to do for this particular study was to find provenances that from our initial collections, provenances from like a northeastern region, from a central region, and from a southwestern region, in an attempt to try to really identify whether these provenance areas would make any difference as to their drought tolerance. So for Mimosa and Phyla, we were able to find two provenances, again, from deep east Texas, central provenances from College Station, and southwestern provenances from Corpus Christi. Onothera and Erigeron, however, we were had to be a little bit different because they are coastal species and really hug the coast rather tightly as far as their native range is concerned. So the distribution is a little bit different, but it's still there. So that's of four different native species, that is three provenances, so 12 genotypes there. And then we included two species for comparison. So Sphagnetocolla trilobata, the Wadelia, and Trichilospermum asiaticum, Asian jasmine. So ultimately we had 14 genotypes and 5 reps per genotype, 70 plants in a completely randomized design. And the labeling from henceforth for the rest of this presentation will be such that 3 letters or 4 letters of the first letters of the genus will be given, followed by SW, C, or NE, which corresponds to southwestern, central, and northeastern provenances, respectively. We planted these in a commercial pine bark-based mix, MetroMix 900. They were grown in full-gallon containers for 3 months. The study was initiated by completely withholding irrigation on the 4th of November of 2013. Our measurements included volumetric water content on a percentage basis daily. Midday and the subsequent pre-dawn water potential were measured initially at the end of the study and at a midpoint, which was given by a mean of 20% volumetric water content on a species basis. So for all 3 genotypes of phyla, when the mean of those 3 genotypes reached 20%, we took a midpoint xylem water potential. Plant dimensions, of course, included height and 2 widths. And then at the end, we destructively harvested the plants for root and shoot dry masses. And we were harvesting these plants when we considered 2 of the 5 reps to be greater than 50% necrotic. And you'll notice this picture in the very top is phyla. And the 2 plants on the right-hand side we considered to be greater than 50% necrotic, whereas the 3 plants on the left were not. One issue that we did run into with this particular protocol was that many times the necrosis would set in a unilateral manner. And so, therefore, it was difficult at times to find when that 2 of the 5 were greater than 50% necrotic. So that was one issue that we did run into. Statistically, we looked at least square means comparisons and analysis of variance, found 2-way interactions among genotype and the date of the measurements for volumetric water contents, for midday water xylem water potentials. That interaction was not significant for the pre-dawn potentials, and there was no main effect of genotype on the pre-dawn potential in our particular study. However, there were main effects of genotype on all other measurements that we took, root mass, shoot mass, root to shoot ratio, the change in plant growth index, and the change in mean spread. So for our first graph that I'll show you today is the midday xylem water potential. And this, again, is at the midpoint, 20% volumetric water content across that particular species. You'll notice that the mimosa is the most negative of all of the, for the most part, of all of the species that we had in this particular study. And the phyla was not far behind as far as stress was concerned, which was counterintuitive because at the very beginning of the study, I had assumed the mimosa and phyla would be able to handle this stress, perhaps in a more efficient way than the Erigeron and the Onothera did. So that was one interesting thing that I noticed, that the Erigeron and the Onothera seemed to be less stressed than the mimosa and the phyla. However, when looking at longevity, as far as how long these particular species on the top stayed in the study and how long the genotypes, each genotype stayed in the study before they were harvested, we find, of course, Asian jasmine was the bane of my existence for a little while. It stayed in for 72 days, which was longer than I had anticipated. Wadelia stayed in for just 10 days, and all the native species were intermediate therein. Mimosa, on the mean, stayed in for approximately 30 days, and phyla for 15. But if you'll notice down here on the bottom that the central provenance of mimosa was stayed in the study for 40 days. The southwestern provenance for 30 days and the northeastern provenance is for just 20 days. So you'll notice there was quite a bit of variance there, but with phyla, for instance, it only stayed in the study for 15 days. I went into the greenhouse and virtually all of them, one day looked fine, the next day were necrotic, greater than 50% necrotic. So I thought that was relatively interesting. Really, here we find the volumetric water content again, on a percentage basis, and this is per species, just to sort of simplify things for the means of this presentation. But we really found what we consider 3 different groups. So you'll notice that over on the left-hand side, Wadelia and phyla reached a 10% threshold of volumetric water content and really, at that point, were harvested. Onothera and Erigeron were able to surpass that 10% threshold of volumetric water content and reach a 5% threshold of volumetric water content. However, at that point, they were unable to stay in the study. They were harvested at that point. And then Mimosa stridulosa and Asian jasmine, which reached past the 10% threshold and reached the 5% threshold and stayed in the study for an extra 7 to, in the case of Asian jasmine, 2 weeks. So they were really able to withstand that low percentage of volumetric water content. Our volumetric water contents were measured with a Decagon ProCheck and a GS3. I should have mentioned that earlier. That were calibrated for the particular substrate that we used. So here is a graph that I think sort of shows all of these plants on an equal basis, if you will. So volumetric water content at harvest. This was the water content in the substrate at the point at which they were greater than 50% necrotic. And what I want you to notice is basically there's two groups here. We see Mimosa and Onothera. This Mimosa from the northeastern Provenance is somewhat of an outlier in this instance, but the Mimosa and the Onothera seems to be quite efficient, if you will, though we didn't measure water use efficiency directly. They seem to be quite efficient at extracting the moisture from the substrate and being able to withstand those sorts of percentages. So Mimosa and Onothera and Asian jasmine seem to be in one group, in our opinion. And then Phylla, and Erigeron and Wedelia seemed to be in another, where all of the only threshold they were able to reach was all at 10% or above, and so they weren't able to extract the moisture from the substrate quite as efficiently as Mimosa and Onothera were. One reason for Mimosa's performance, we think, in this particular study is that you'll see the great root-to-shoot ratio for a couple of these mimosas in particular, Mimosa from the central Provenance and Mimosa from the northeastern Provenance. The Mimosa from the central Provenance has a root-to-shoot ratio of 14 to 1, which is by far greater than anything else in the study. All of the other genotypes seem to be, they were not statistically different from each other. So we found that this was one way that Mimosa was able to convey this drought tolerance that it was able to because of these incredible taproots. I thought that was quite interesting. They, even in containers, they really continue to produce these taproots and produce large root systems compared to the other. Of course, they also have smaller shoot systems as well. So that's one other thing that contributes to that root-to-shoot ratio. So in conclusion today, we found three main response groups to acute drought stress in our study. We found some plants were able to withstand approximately 10% volumetric water content, and then they were harvested. That would be Wedelia and Phylla. Those that briefly withstood approximately 5% volumetric water content, Erigeron and Onothera, and those that withstood the approximately 5% volumetric water content for an extended period, they were able to continue to survive at that point, at least with greater than less than 50% necrosis. Mimosa and Asian jasmine. Mimosa and Onothera displayed an ability to withstand these similar reductions in volumetric water content. So if you'll remember the volumetric water content at harvest slide, we really think of these more, maybe less in three groups and more in two groups because of their ability to extract those the moisture from the substrate and also be able to withstand those lower percentages of volumetric water content. We also noted that there were differences as far as provenance was concerned, where drought stress tolerance was concerned as well. However, those differences did not stretch across species lines, if you will. And so therefore, we really don't have a good indication as to whether, you know, a northeastern provenance will perform better than a southwestern provenance as far as drought tolerance, at least acute drought tolerance is concerned. However, within species, there certainly are patterns. Phylla was the first native species to succumb, which again was counterintuitive to what I had initially thought. But when rethinking this particular study, we realized that in nature, Phylla and Wedelia and ground covers like that are able to spread rapidly and root from the nodes and therefore are able to extract moisture from large amounts of soil as opposed to the contained substrate that they were in these particular gallon containers. And, of course, we replicated this study with a modified replication with chronic drought stress from December of 13 and May of 14. And with that, I'd like to thank AgriLife and, of course, my co-authors, Dr. Charlie Hall. I'll mention him first since he was here today. I appreciate that. Dr. Mike Arnold especially, Dr. Pemberton, and Dr. Palma. So with that, I think I may have time for a question. Whomever. Go ahead.
I was just curious. I came in late. Great.
Yeah, sure.
The biomass water content here, assuming that the plant can reach that, did you measure stomatal conductance, or did the plant just... how do you know that there
sure.
wasn't a longevity of the plant holding that water content for a longer period of time, being more efficient with retaining that water with its intercellular?
This is a great question. So why wasn't the conductance in these different measurements measured? Quite honestly, we're trying to come up with a screening device at this point. I didn't have that equipment available to me, and so that was one issue that we had. And so we have to be careful with what we can take from this study without question, and I attempt to do so. But really and truly, I think the only thing that I could really talk about were the volumetric water contents at which they survive. So unfortunately, I can't speak to that point, but I'd love to be able to.
Thank you.
You bet. All right.